Hello, everybody. Welcome to AAA Sky. I'm Stanley Fertig, and this is the first episode of Season 3 of AAA Sky. Before we go any further, I'd first like to introduce our newest member of the AAA Sky team, Malika Jackson, also known as MJ. MJ comes to us from NPR and Newsday. Besides astronomy, she's also an avid scuba diver and animal welfare volunteer here in New York. So please join me in wishing a warm welcome to MJ.
Hello, everyone. This is MJ. I just want to say it's an honor to be here. It's my first year as a AAA member, and I'm really excited to find out more about the universe along with our listeners.
In today's episode, Kat Trosch interviews Brian Levine about Astronomy on Tap, which if you haven't been there yet, you should go as soon as you can. What is Astronomy on Tap? Stay tuned to find out.
AAA Sky is produced by the Amateur Astronomers Association of New York, whose mission is to promote the study of astronomy and to emphasize its cultural and inspirational value. Find out more about AAA at AAA.org. First, here's a word from our president of the AAA, Brian Berg.
Hello, and welcome back to AAA Sky, the official podcast of the Amateur Astronomy Association of New York. I am Brian Berg, the president, and it gives me great, great pleasure to introduce everyone to Season 3 of AAA Sky. We kick off the first episode with Kat interviewing Brian Levine, a brilliant astronomy educator and host of Astronomy on Tap, as he takes us on a rather unique kind of tour of our solar system. When it comes to exploration, our solar system, it's difficult for most people to imagine the vast distances to be traveled between the sun, the earth, and the planets. As you'll soon see, Brian's approach will help wipe away the mystery in a very real and down-to-earth fashion. And, of course, exploration is what AAA is all about. So, before we get into the podcast, I just want to remind everyone, please go to AAA.org, take a look at our calendar, look at everything that we offer from our lectures and our classes, and of course, observing season is just about to begin, and we are always looking for volunteers for everything that we do. I hope that you all join us on the path of exploration. With that said, Kat, take it away.
Brian Levine is an astronomy educator, education administrator, science communicator, and longtime producer and host of New York City's Astronomy on Tap as MC Tycho Brouhaha. He started his career as a science teacher in a Brooklyn middle school, moving to the American Museum of Natural History, managing several teen programs, and working as a public programs presenter within the Hayden Planetarium. He received a master's degree in science education and is now at the City College of New York as an administrative coordinator. A lifelong Brooklynite and avid fish fan, he also serves on the board of several nonprofits, including the New York City Museum Educators Roundtable, and has worked with many educational institutions, both formal and informal, along with leisure-based science programs across the country. Brian, thank you so much. It's been a long time coming. I meant to do this last season with you, and we just never got around to it, unfortunately.
I'm happy to be here. I'm a longtime supporter, of course, of although I should say shamefully never a member of, and maybe I should change that, the Amateur Astronomers Association.
Excitement. All right, Brian. So tell us about what activity we're going to do today. And everyone out there, you're going to have to use your imagination and you're going to have to use some of that 2020 toilet paper you've been hoarding.
Yeah. We're going to try to do this together in a way that you can follow with at home. So what you're going to need is, as Kat just said, a roll of toilet paper and something that can write on the toilet paper. I found that a good old Sharpie works, but I have kind of thick toilet paper. I don't know, maybe I didn't try the thin stuff. So
I also have been hoarding thick toilet paper. Thank you.
yeah. But yeah, so what this is and what the relationship to astronomy is, you can do a nice little tour of the solar system using a roll of toilet paper. And maybe let's if you're at home and you're going to follow along, let's hit pause for a moment on the podcast and go get your toilet paper and come back with a Sharpie also. And we're back. Look at the magic of the radio. but yeah, Kat, normally think of, if you just Googled an image of the solar system, what would you see? How would you visually describe that?
A land without Pluto, unfortunately.
Okay, sure. We're actually going to have Pluto in our model today. It works out well with Pluto. But like, how are the planets lined up?
Oh, well, you know, easy mom. How are the planets lined up? So of course we have our sun, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, and then we have our little asteroid belt, Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune.
And how close do they usually look in a, you know, like a standard kind of artist rendition of the solar system?
Very close.
Yeah. Yeah, they always look like they're on top of each other and they like line them up. They're nice in a row, usually in that order, hopefully, you know. You know, I don't know why you wouldn't put them in that order. But yeah, the models like that are nice. You can do a size model very nicely that way. And the sun usually just not on the page completely. You just see kind of a little curve of the edge of the sun. Right. And you can look at the sizes of the different objects, but it's really hard to look at the distances. So our model today will focus not on the sizes of the objects, but on the distances. Because honestly, the sizes would be so small that it would just, everything would be a pinpoint anyway. So, the first step is to measure out 16 squares of toilet paper and just in a row. Don't separate them. You know, count. You've got the edge, and then you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 16.
All right, I've got my 16 squares.
I did that so people following along have a little soundtrack while they're measuring theirs out. And depending on the exact size of your squares, it's like, for me, it's almost the length of like my arm to arm, like arm's length. If I stretch out both arms, it's almost that long. If you're a smaller child that's following along, it might be more than your arm's length. But you know, adult size should be about that.
Yeah. My wingspan is a little bit smaller than yours. So it is, I'm drooping in the middle, but that's fine.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. No, it should droop a little bit. Now, this is a wonderful exploration of fractions as well. So if you have any kids that are learning fractions, and unfortunately, we're basically going to be using the American system of distance here, which is fraction-based, of course, not powers of 10. But it works really well for this. So that said, on one edge, so one of the sides of it, all the way at the edge, as close to the edge as possible, take a Sharpie and just write Pluto. And we're going to call that the average distance to Pluto. If you know anything about planet orbits, you know they don't stay exactly the same, and they're not a circle. They actually are an ellipse or kind of an oval shape. But we're just going to deal with kind of a rough average of these distances here. Again, this is a toilet paper model of the solar system. It's not going to be perfect.
You hear that, Mike Brown?
So at the other end, what do you think goes at the other end?
Would have to be Neptune. Oh no, the sun. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Excuse me. The other my squares. Oh no.
Yeah. So at the other end, you have Pluto on one end, and then switch to the other end, and as close to the edge as you can.
Okay.
Write sun. Write it like along the edge, basically. And we'll get to why it should be really, really close to the edge later.
Okay.
But yeah. All right, so we've got our roll of toilet, or our 16 squares of toilet paper here. We've got the sun on one end. We've got the Pluto on the other end. And it turns out in our model, that is going to be about 3.7 billion miles, 3 billion 700 million miles in the metric system. It's almost 6 million kilometers. And again, that's an average distance to Pluto. Remember, nothing really orbits in a circle, especially Pluto. It's a lot more elliptical, like a squished kind of circle. So let's start making our model, and let's look about halfway. So again, we have 16 squares. So if we count to the middle one, half the way in, the eighth perforation from either the sun or Pluto. So count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There is an object approximately there. And what do you think that object might be?
Given the size of the gas and ice giants, I want to say Saturn.
Okay. You are correct that we are in gas and ice giant land, but it is actually the next one. It's Uranus. Uranus is at the halfway mark between the sun and Pluto.
How very appropriate for toilet paper.
That's ching. So we're going to label Uranus on our eighth perforation, half the way out to Pluto.
Okay.
So that only leaves one object between the Uranus mark and our end at Pluto. So that's got to be
Neptune.
That's got to be Neptune.
That's pretty incredible.
It is. It's this model's really good for showing how kind of vast the solar system is. So if you're at your Uranus mark, that was at the eighth perforation, then we count 9, 10, 11, 12. That gets us 3/4, 12/16, or 3/4 out to Pluto. And we're going to label Neptune on that perforation, 3/4 of the way out. And that's why it's really takes a while to get to things like Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. You know, it was almost 7 or 8 years for New Horizons to get to Pluto. And that was the fastest object we've ever sent off the Earth.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So let's look inward of Uranus then. So we've got to fit, what do we got to fit? Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. And Saturn. So what I like to do is say, let's fold it from the sun to Uranus, just so we can find that kind of middle perforation there easily. That's going to be our 1/4 spot.
Yes.
What might be there? So we've got Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn. What are you thinking?
Now I'm thinking it might be Saturn again.
Yep, it is. This time it is Saturn. Yeah. Still quite a distance between objects out here. So Saturn is going to be at your 1/4 mark, or 4/16 mark, 4 perforations from the sun.
Okay.
All right. Then half of that, or 2 perforations, 1/8, our lovely American system of distances in fractions that are related to not the number 10. half the way between between sun and Saturn is, I just kind of gave it away, that's Jupiter.
That is incredible.
So we are now 1/8 of the way out from the sun, and we still have Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, and actually the asteroid belt. I haven't been mentioning that one, but it is in our model as well. And the asteroid belt should probably be the next thing that we look at. And that is at that first perforation, 1/16 of the way. Serious?
For those of you at home, the faces I'm making right now as I'm marking my toilet paper, it's actually, I'm actually kind of stunned. You know, when we talk about astronomy, you know, when we're out in public and we're doing events with Sidewalk Astronomy, or even in terms of if we're ever, you know, talking about the solar system at your project, you know, Astronomy on Tap, it's one thing to kind of throw it out in numbers, and I'm a person that, like, if you give me a number, I'll just say okay, and I don't really have a concept of that number. Mm-hmm. This puts it into perspective for me a lot easier, where I'm actually looking at this paper and going, oh my God. Like,
yeah. 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 I mean, it's the reality of the size of the solar system is kind of mind blowing.
Yeah.
That, as we'll see in a second, Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars are kind of stacked in to a very short distance, which is why we can explore them really easy, which is why we send something to Mars every 2 years, because kind of we can, and it's the closest object. But getting to these other objects is no easy feat. And the time it would take for a human to get to them, because you can't just shoot a human out at the same
right.
acceleration that you need to get up to that speed that New Horizons got to. Yeah, it would just be kind of a you know, lifetimes almost. Maybe not lifetimes, but significant portions of one's lifetime. All right, so we've got the sun. We've got the asteroid belt on our first fold. If we fold that in half from the sun to the asteroid belt, there's Mars. And then you kind of equally... So that would be our 1/32nd spot for those following along on the fractions. And then you can split the 1/32nd here into 128th, 2 128ths, or 1/64th, 3 128ths, and then Mars. And it's pretty much Mercury, Venus, Earth are fairly evenly spread out along those last tick marks. You know, basically Mars is at the far end between the sun and the Earth, the sun and Mars, and Mercury, Venus, Earth are pretty equally spaced in there. Yeah, 1/132nd of the way to the sun. Again, this is approximate. This is using nice, easy fractions. The distances are, you know, a little more, we know them a little more precisely than this, but you squish everything in to that first... 64th of the solar system, and then 63/64ths is the rest of it.
Holy cow.
And I love this little model because it's so easy to understand and so easy to make and then take with you. And I've done it with everybody from kids to adults. So yeah, that's just one of the ways I like to interact with the public, is to like kind of blow their minds a little bit. I'm not a researcher, but I am an educator, very much by training, and this is a good one.
I will be using this for every public outreach I can, although I might not use the good stuff. I might stick with Scott.
You can also get cashier's tape. It's the stuff that goes into cash registers. You don't have the little folds in it, which the toilet paper is really nice about. But it's also easier to write on if you get the stuff that is not, what is that stuff? The heat, there's like the paper ones and the heat,
print. Thermal
paper. Yeah. The thermal paper is not very good.
Okay.
But yeah. And you can get little tiny solar system stickers, so you can stick them on there, and it's a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. This is really educating. And again, it's putting into perspective the size of the solar system again, because we talk about these distances, but unless you're actually showing somebody a physical representation, all of that is just numbers. And it's just, yep. You know, it's just you nod your head and go, yeah, okay. This was super cool. Thank you, Brian.
You're welcome.
So really quickly, only because I mentioned it earlier, you are part of this amazing, now global program to bring education to the public in an extremely informal setting, my favorite setting, a bar, and that is Astronomy on Tap. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, Astronomy on Tap is an effort that started at a wine bar, actually, in New Haven. Astronomy Uncorked was a run, and then Emily Rice, a good friend of mine who works in the CUNY astronomy department, which that doesn't really exist. So we met when I worked at the Museum of Natural History here in New York City, because a lot of astronomers from CUNY meet there, and it's a nice hub. And she had this idea and started running with it and turned it into Astronomy on tap, so that it ran at bars and kind of brew pubs and stuff like that. And the whole idea is to bring astronomers and put them on stage, but not in the way that you might go to a kind of formal lecture at a university or that you might hear on Nova or something along those lines. It's meant to be fun. It's meant to allow them, the astronomers, them to have fun with their presenting, to kind of be creative and use memes and use pop culture as part of what they're doing. And a big kind of point from our end of the people that are putting these on, the producers, is to show that astronomers are just normal people. They just, their day job might be a little more intimidating than some and has a lot more math and physics, but they're normal people. They like the same stuff. They go to concerts, they watch TV, they laugh at stupid memes and animated GIFs. And in that way also, the public kind of can create this connection maybe that isn't normally there when you go to a science kind of lecture.
100%. I still remember my first Astronomy on Tap. It was 2013 at the Way Station, RIP. And that was my first time really stepping into listening to, you know, a lecture series. With AAA at the time, we had lecture series through the Museum of Natural History. And while that was fine, it was a very formal setting and very intimidating, to be honest, as somebody who was just cutting their teeth in astronomy. And then to go from that to such a shift where, you know, it's just regular people hanging out, having drinks, talking, laughing, listening to a talk and absorbing that information in a different way, retaining it in a different way because it became fun and less intimidating. And it made me want to pursue that informal education further, just because it made it less scary. And it was such a fun experience. And I'm so glad that you all have been able to do it and expand.
Yeah, it started in New York, and Emily started kind of recruiting people in other cities through the professional astronomy networks in the American Astronomical Society conferences and just through other kind of informal networks within the astronomy community. And others liked the idea, and we kind of made a central organizing document that's full of really bad puns. So it is the launch manifesto, if you will. So we're headquarters. We're here in New York City. We're headquarters. The other locations are our satellite locations. We celebrate orbit versaries and stuff along those lines as well. But we have this organizing document. So we have a kind of a central idea of what it's supposed to be with a lot of suggestions and tips. And that makes it real easy. We can just kind of pass this kit along to others and they can start it up. Other locations have used not just bars, but actual breweries and presentation spaces, cafes on college campuses, not depending on who and how much support they get from local places. We have here in New York City, we have no formal support. We have no funding either. So our games and prizes and things all are made up by us the prizes are often pilfered from conferences or from the window outside of Neil Tyson's office, because he just gets a lot of stuff that he gives away. So we give that away. it's really allowed it to expand. We've been in, I think, over 75 cities. And if I had to guess, 1,500 shows worldwide in the past 10 years or so. Probably at least 100 of those are here in New York City. I know we hit our 75th anniversary, 75th date specifically once, but I lost track after that. And it allows for expansion too into other topics. So the exact same format can be used for biology we did a special dinosaurs one here in New York once. I've been approached by people who want to journalism or law even, or history. So it's really, we haven't done all those, but it could really expand. But there have been a couple biology on taps that have popped up. And
I remember biology on taps.
Yeah. And there's another city or two that has them as well. It even started before ours did. And it allows us to also expand that idea of presenting to the public in this in more informal way. So, you know, Kat, when we were out a couple of weeks ago at the Cradle of Aviation, you know, that was their event, but they were very much allowing us to kind of plan it in that same Astronomy on Tap way, mixed in with that museum exploration and the telescopes outside, in a way that we can't do at a bar because, you know, it's a little more enclosed space with some time restrictions.
And you're celebrating a big anniversary, AOT NYC.
We are. It's been 10 years. And if I heard right, actually, you were at one of our apparently first events back in 2013.
I was. I remember the event. I don't remember the topic of discussion, unfortunately. I just remember that there were cupcakes after.
Sure. We've had cupcakes in a bunch. So 10 years. 10 years we are doing our 10th anniversary celebration on April 12th here in New York City at DROM. It's in Manhattan. Tickets are for sale. Since we pre-recorded this, I can't tell you if there are still any available. So take a look on our Facebook page and for a link to those, Astro on Tap NYC. Yeah, it should be a great event. We're gonna have a whole bunch of different things. We have a ton of prizes to give out. We have guests that are going to be coming from old Astronomy on Tap friends and collaborators. I hope you'll be there, Kat.
Absolutely.
We might have some music. We're going to have, we're at least going to have some music. I won't spoil that surprise, but there's one of the presentations is going to be musical. And we might have some hellos from some guests from afar, from other Astronomy on Taps. And we're trying to make a big spectacle of it. We usually do things for free. But because we're actually renting out this nicer space, the tickets are going to be paid this time. But we're trying to keep it relatively low. And for the people that can afford it a little bit more, we'll come with some like special swag bags or prizes or extra raffle tickets for things that were given out, stuff along those lines. So we hope to see you there.
That sounds fantastic. I can't wait. And if you're listening and you catch this recording beforehand, that is going to be on April 12th, 2023.
Yeah. And if not that, then check our Facebook page, Astronomy on Tap New York City or Astro on Tap New York City. We've been doing monthly events for 2022 and at least the beginning of 2023 at Pete's Candy in Williamsburg. Pete's Candy Store, I think it's called, actually, in Williamsburg. It's a much smaller space than the Way Station used to be. If we have some people out there that have been to the Way Station events before the pandemic, we miss it, but we're still running, and it's been a lot of fun, and yeah.
All right, and then there's one more question that we like to ask our guests. It's just kind of a running question. What is, and it doesn't have to be anything related to astronomy or physics, what is your favorite place in New York City?
Ooh.
It's always a head scratcher.
That is a tough one. So I'm a born and bred Brooklynite, firstly. you know, if I were thinking for the view, it would be the Brooklyn Promenade, you know, such a spectacular view of New York City. I could probably come up with a list of 50 favorite places. Prospect Park is a particular personal favorite. It's just a couple blocks from where I grew up and such a wonderful thing to have as a kid. You know, I was lucky and had a small backyard, but to have something along the lines of Prospect Park where there are spaces where you can have telescopes even, or just lie back on the fields and look up at the stars and the planes flying into LaGuardia and stuff like that. Yeah, let's go with those.
All right. You heard it. Brooklyn Promenade and Prospect Park. It's a tie.
Yeah, pretty close tie. Yeah.
Brian, thank you so much. I might try to reuse this toilet paper.
I thought there supply chain issues on that had been fixed, but you know.
We are only kidding, folks. Thank you so much, Brian. It was great sitting with you, and we look forward to the 10-year anniversary for Astronomy on Tap.
Yeah, and thank you for having me. It's really nice to be on officially. I was actually, funny that you mentioned it took a while to get me on. I was actually on a pre-published version in one of the practice sessions that Irene did.
Okay.
And I don't think it was never aired, but because it was just meant for practice.
Well,
so I appreciate being on the real version now, and keep up the good work. The amateur astronomers are really you guys. I know I was making fun of myself for not having a membership earlier, but you guys do good work. You all do good work, and I look forward to collaborating many more times in the future.
We have to get you that membership. Thank you, Brian.
Well, I have to say, I was absolutely fascinated by this episode. I mean, who would have thought that something as simple as a roll of toilet paper could be transformed into a model of the solar system? But what really struck me was how it brought the vastness of space down to Earth, so to speak. And when we talk about space, it's easy to get lost in the numbers and statistics, but seeing the planets represented on a roll of toilet paper really brought things into perspective. You could see just how far apart things really are and appreciate the enormity of the universe in a way that just can't be put on paper or on screen. And Stanley, I was wondering, did you do the exercise with them?
I did not, I have to confess. But I do have another analogy, if you will. Just to emphasize this point about how far apart everything is, which is hard to get your head around. If we shrunk the sun down to the size of a beach ball, and then we shrunk all the up the planets and the space between them by the same scale, then the Earth would be the size of a pea, and it would be about 110 miles away from the beach ball. So if the beach ball were in Manhattan, then that little pea of an Earth would be roughly in Hartford, Connecticut. And the closest star to the sun, Proxima Centauri, would be, on that scale, a quarter of the way to the moon. There's a lot of empty space out there.
A lot of empty space. And wow, I mean, just the vastness of the sun, when you put it into that comparison, is fascinating. But thank God for the sun, you know, and thank God for a good tan, right?
Here comes the sun.
Yes, exactly. You know, as far as Astronomy on Tap, I can say I absolutely love the idea. Astronomy on Tap is a fantastic initiative that brings together astronomy enthusiasts, scientists, and beer. What more can you ask for? The New York City chapter is particularly impressive with events that are both informative and entertaining. And the best part is that they're presented in a way that's accessible and engaging, even for those who are new to astronomy. I can't personally wait to go on April 12th for the 10th anniversary.
Yeah, go to astronomyontap.org to find out details as to where the beer is.
I want to know where the beer is. Absolutely.
Of course. Incidentally, when Brian Levine mentioned Emily Rice as co-founder of Astronomy on Tap, so just so you all know, we interviewed Emily Rice just at the start of AAA Sky, our first season, I think it was episode number 2, where she discussed brown dwarfs, which she studies, as well as StarTorialist.com, which she also co-founded, where you can buy the latest in astro fashion. When I saw her speak, she was wearing a Jupiter dress. Emily is a very creative individual.
Oh, that's amazing. I personally love fashion, so I would love to see her designs. And who knows, you know, maybe we can wear that to an Astronomy on Tap event here with the Amateurs Astronomers Association. You know, after all, what's better than a cold beer, some nice fashionable astronomy attire, and some mind-bending science? Thank you.
We'd now like to introduce a new highlight of AAA Sky, Looking Up, where we tell you about upcoming astronomy and AAA events in and around New York. As April brings warmer weather to the region, the AAA has multiple public observing events scheduled throughout the month. First up is Tuesday, April 4th, where we'll be observing at Fort Greene Park in Brooklyn, beginning at around 7:30 p.m.
During the afternoon on Sunday, April 9th, the AAA will be hosting a solar observing for the public at Pioneer Works. That's at 159 Pioneer Street in Brooklyn. Come see the sun through a safe solar telescope. The weekend of April 15th and 16th is the Northeast Astronomy Forum for NEAF in Rockland County, the biggest annual astronomy show on the East Coast. The AAA will be there in force at our booth, and if you need a ride, we typically carpool to get there. More information is available on our website and at neafexpo.com.
On April 22nd, we'll be joining Sister Club, United Astronomy Clubs of New Jersey, or UACNJ, for observing at Jenny Jump State Forest in New Jersey from around 8 p.m. on. Jenny Jump is about an hour west of the Hudson River, and you can find directions on our events calendar or at uacnj.org. I personally have been to Jenny Jump, and the skies there make for great observing. We have our own 20-inch Dobsonian telescope available there, so don't hesitate to come, even if you don't have a telescope yourself. Details on how to get to all these locations are available on our website.
On April 25th, we have an Astro News Hour Zoom webinar with Bob Marks, who will speak on the new understanding of the Kuiper Belt at the edge of the solar system. Registration will open on our website on April 8th, so don't miss it. We also have a public lecture scheduled for Tuesday, April 11th at 7 p.m. via Zoom. Join us to hear Dr. K.E. Savick-Ford of the Borough of Manhattan Community College discuss how big black holes also have little black holes. The AAA lectures are free and open to the public, but you do need to register. You can find the Zoom link on the AAA calendar.
During the evening of April 28th, we have our annual Spring Starfest with observing, presentations, raffles, and prizes. It's at the Evergreen Cemetery at 1629 Bushwick Avenue in Brooklyn. It's a fabulous evening star party, so don't miss it. For those of you who can't come to the Starfest, we'll also have public observing the same evening from Floyd Bennett Field in Brooklyn, as well as from the flight deck of the Intrepid Sea, Air, and Space Museum.
Finally, on April 29th, we will have a public observing from sunset onward at Great Kills Park on Staten Island. You can find more information and updates on these events on our events calendar at aaa.org/calendar.
That's our show. Tune in next time when Lockheed Martin software engineer Paige Godfrey tells us what it's like to develop software for the Orion space capsule. Until then, stop by aaa.org to learn more about the AAA and how you can become part of it.
AAA Sky is a production of the Amateur Astronomers Association of New York. Audio editing and original music are by Preston Stelly. Our technical producer is Parker Bussier.